Welcome to Sun Talk here on Sun Sounds. I'm Richard Dugan. Thank you very much for joining us on the program tonight. My guest on the phones, David Hawthorne. Welcome back to Sun Talk.
Hi, Richard. Thanks for having me on.
And we'll just allow the piano player Schroeder to slip back into
that's
the background
great,
there.
That's a great intro piece. I like it.
Absolutely. Love it myself. And thank you very much for joining us here on Christmas Eve Eve.
My pleasure.
We are going to, as I when I set this up, we are going to talk a little serious. We're also going to talk a little fun as well. And take a look at Vedic astrology. And for those who have not joined us in the past, we might want to do a little refresher course on Vedic Astrology 101 and just exactly what all that means to us, the layperson, as it were. You have studied this for a number of years, and this goes back probably, what, 5, 6, 7, 10,000 years? Tell us a little bit about the background of Vedic astrology.
They say that Vedic astrology is at least 5,000 years old, maybe even 8,000 years old. And it was actually originally, what they say, cognized by the rishis, which are the ancient teachers of the ancient seers. But it became known as, first it's called Jyotisha. Jyotisha means the science of light. So it was a study of light, the knowledge of light, and it comes from the Vedas, the land of knowledge. But this Jyotish became known as Raj Vidya, meaning kingly knowledge. So all the kings used Vedic astrology. So we really believe that this knowledge is very precious. It's a divine science that can peer into the past, the present, and the future. It's interesting on this Christmas show because in my belief, my personal belief, is that the three wise men were following a star because they were astrologers. So in my opinion, astrology is a divine science. It is quite old. Now, Vedic astrology is a little bit different from what we know here in USA as Western astrology. It's like all knowledge, over time, it gets handed down and handed down, and some things get changed. So the Western astrologers are using what is known as tropical zodiac. We are using what is known as sidereal zodiac. I won't go out into all the details, but there's 23 degrees difference. And we do not so much look at sun signs in Vedic astrology. We look at the rising sign because the rising sign is only there for 2 hours a day. Mm-hmm. Every 2 hours it changes. Whereas the sun sits in one sign for 30 days. So the two-hour rising sign is much more accurate, much more reflective of the individual. So we can look at the rising sign chart for anyone. Horoscope means the hour and the observer. So one who observes the hour reads the horoscope.
Mm-hmm.
And every hour of the day there's a different chart. So we can look at the birth chart or the natal chart and see how the planets were operating at the moment of birth. And this gives us a clue to the individual's strengths and weaknesses. For example, if at the moment of a person's birth, sun on that day was debilitated, and sun represents strength and vitality and courage and self-confidence and willpower and discipline and leadership and status, so if sun is debilitated, meaning it's very weak in the chart, then the person may lack some self-confidence. Whereas if on the day the person's born, sun is exalted, it can give a person with great self-confidence, great status, great leadership capability, that type of thing. So in looking at the chart, we look to see how the planets are operating, and we look to see when they are operating. And we can also, under Vedic astrology, more than just the Western personality traits, we can see older siblings, younger siblings. We can see mother. We can see father. We can see children. We can see marriage. We can see health. We can see many different issues in life, the career, the income. So the good astrologer knows what to look for, why they're looking for it, and then we can do some reading on how the planets were operating at the time of birth. Now, we do want to combine your personal chart with where the planets are today, because it is said that there is nothing more powerful than the present moment.
Mm-hmm.
We live in the present moment, we die in the present moment. So we want to see the planets and how they are influencing your natal chart at any given time during the day, any week, any month, and then we can arrive at some conclusions. And we can see coming or future trends and understand whether a person is swimming with the stream or against the stream.
Okay. A little basic synopsis there, and I think that's very good for us to know. And I guess to follow up on all that you have just said, give me in a couple of sentences a practical usage of Vedic astrology for, say, either myself, somebody listening, who hasn't really necessarily even followed the newspaper astrology, which, again, is different from Vedic astrology. That's Western astrology. Who doesn't necessarily ignore the signs in the sky, so to speak, but isn't necessarily controlled by pulling, say, a card every day or finding some way to get some kind of guidance. Give us a practical usage for Vedic astrology.
Okay, I think the one thing is that everyone should every maybe 6 months or 12 months have a Vedic astrology reading to understand, to remind them how the planets are operating, what their strengths are, what their weaknesses are, and most importantly, where they are now.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, the hands on the clock. So we can see that maybe for the next 6 months, we can be having some setbacks or difficulties, and then we know we can just rest for a little while. Whereas if we're in a very good period, that means that it's good to expand and to grow and to move forward. So we can use it like a guide or like a roadmap. I call it the owner's manual of the human body. So that's, I guess, one way we could use it. Now, again, I don't personally try to convince anyone of the value of astrology. If people have, are somewhat open-minded and they're learning and progressive and they're exploring knowledge, then those are the kind of people that might have some, awareness and some openness to it. Whereas the people who don't have a belief in it, that's fine. They can continue with their non-belief, and that's all well and good. But I do believe that the planets have a great power and a great influence on us as individuals and the Earth as a whole. And so it's okay to have some awareness of how they're influencing us.
I think at this time of the year, and every time at this time, year after year, we speak of a star. And the wise men, as you mentioned at the front end of the program, who followed this star, these astrologers. And so it is obvious right there. I mean, how much bigger a piece of information do you need?
Very good.
These men knew that this star meant something. This thing in the heavens had it signified or symbolized something that they were aware of, and then they followed through on it. So what's the difference between that and the astrology that you read about in the papers? Well, from talking with David over the last 6 months, and it's amazing, it's getting close to almost a year that you and I have been associated, I'm understanding that Vedic astrology and the chart doesn't change from year to year. It is the blueprint, if you will, or roadmap from birth to death. But when you made the comment, because this is what really pinpointed it for me, when you made the comment about getting a reading every 6 months to remind us of, not to give you a new prediction for the future, but to remind you of some of the things that are going on in your life. There are two in particular I want you to go into. We'll do a little defining of terms here, David.
Sure.
One is Rahu and one is Ketu. And those two refer, when you get a reading from David, you're going to hear Rahu and Ketu come up in your chart. And those are periods I'm going to put them in a biblical context. That could be a period, whether it's 7 minutes, hours, days, or years, of tribulation, or as David likes to call them, affliction. So tell us a little bit more about Rahu and Ketu, and then we'll move on to the good stuff.
Well, thank you. In Vedic astrology, we use the seven planets that everyone is aware of, the Sun, the Moon, the Mars, Mercury, Jupiter, Venus, and Saturn. In addition, we use the north and south node, or nodes, of the moon. Nodes is N-O-D-E-S, nodes of the moon. The northern node is called Rahu, and the southern node is called Ketu. These nodes are actually mathematical ecliptic points, and they do cause the eclipse of the sun and the moon. So if they can bring darkness to the sun and the moon, what kind of an effect can they have in our life? They can cause darkness, confusion, calamity, unexpected events. By the way, these are the only nine planets that we use. We don't use the outer planets such as Pluto and Neptune, that type of thing. But Rahu and Ketu are functional malefic influences for every rising sign. So it's as though, you know, there's an old saying, God invented the law of karma and then retired. There was nothing more to invent. And the law of karma simply means, as we sow, so shall we reap. So the point is, Rahu and Ketu seem to deliver karma. They seem to deliver our afflictions in life. Now, Rahu is more material-oriented and causes addictions and intoxications, ambition, exhaustion, fame, fortune, charisma, but it also brings worry, fears, phobias, anxieties, death-like experiences, unexpected events, that type of thing. Ketu is non-material. Ketu is more of a spiritual influence. So if someone is in a K2 sub-period, an operating period, then they can very much have very deep spiritual awakening. So sometimes even the malefic influences has a positive effect. See, K2 is connected with what they call enlightenment or spiritual awakening. And this typically came about when the king would leave the palace and go live in a cave or an ashram in exile or a foreign land, and that's how they gained enlightenment. Well, this also happens in modern society by people being put in hospitals or prisons or ashrams or monasteries or convents. See, when they go into seclusion, sometimes nature puts you into seclusion for a reason and wants you to go deeply inside yourself and to wake up on the spiritual plane into what to a level called enlightenment, which is simply being in the present moment, fully alert and awake and in appreciation for the divine aspects of life.
It's something, too, to define the terms. I've always found that that's extremely important in this age of information. Knowledge is power. And if you know what the terms mean, you're going to get a better understanding of what you're hearing in total context. And that's why I think it's important for people before they contact you, which they can do through various sources, which we will get to in just a moment. They can contact you and say, hey, David, I'd like a reading. I'd like to find out what is my blueprint. What is it that I am going to be looking at over the next week, month, year? And so forth. What is the pattern that I can, I suppose in one sense, and correct me if I'm wrong, David, that I can count on? The pattern that's going to be there, and I'm going to be prepared for it. I'm going to kind of mentally gird myself up, emotionally, maybe even physically, in preparation for it. And maybe we should go into another area when you talk about Rahu and Ketu, and that is, are those phases or parts of the blueprint or map that you share with someone, are they inevitable? They are going to happen? Is that what, when you give someone a reading about future potentiality?
Well, that's a very, very good question, very wise question. The situation is that for every planet rules a specific amount of time. For example, if someone is running their main period of Venus, for every person, that is 20 years. However, there are sub-periods of much lesser time. It could be 6 weeks, 6 months, or a year, that type of thing. And that sub-period planet is called the operating planet, or the hands on the clock. So these things change. for every person based on the where the moon was positioned when they were born. And so it, there is a possibility that you can go long periods of time without any negative influence and vice versa. I mean, it's really interesting. We can see in the lives of people where some people rise very high only to fall, like O.J. Simpson and Richard Nixon.
Mm-hmm.
And other people maybe fall first, like the TV comedian Tim Allen.
Yes.
Who is very wealthy and affluent and famous now, but previously he was in prison for selling cocaine.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm sure at that time he was not, you know, favorable position or planetary influence. So these things do change, and that's the beautiful other issue here, is that we can see the light at the end of the tunnel. So mm-hmm. many times we've been able to use, over the last 13 years I've been doing this, we've been able to use Vedic astrology to help people come out of their miseries and help them understand that only in another week or another month or something, this influence will be gone. And it can save marriages, it can save jobs, or even lives. A person may feel like they're ready to jump off of the bridge, and we can say, no, 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 because just in another few weeks, this very intense influence will be gone, and you'll come out of that difficult, you'll come out of the darkness, you'll come back into the light, and then there's some relief. So we can use this in a very intelligent way.
David Hawthorne is my guest. You're listening to Sun Talk here on Sun Sounds on this Christmas Eve Eve. And I'm Richard Dugan, your host. David, you have a website. Give me that address.
It's astroview.com. It's astro, A-S-T-R-O, view, V-I-E-W.com. And that's a good way to get in touch with me. Or if a person wants to call, I'm in Iowa at area code 641. 472-3799.
Okay, 602, I beg your pardon, that's 641-472-3799, astroview.com. We'll give that information out as we go along to anybody who might want to make touch base with David. He has a book, Astrology in Life, or I should say Astrology for Life, and he is certainly open to taking giving readings as well as providing you with other sources or forms of, shall we call them protection, guidance materials?
We call them planetary remedies.
Thank you.
So
yes.
There are planetary remedies which were discovered thousands of years ago. The kings always use them, and royal persons and wealthy persons have known for many thousands of years that the planetary gemstones, such as the ruby, the pearl, the emerald, the diamond, that these are wonderful planetary remedies. So if someone, for example, has a debilitated or afflicted or badly placed sun, then they can use the ruby to improve their health, vitality, and longevity, as well as status, self-confidence, and willpower. If they have difficulty emotionally connecting with others, then the pearl is very good to give them peace of mind and the ability to understand and comprehend and help connect with other people emotionally. So the different gemstones are very precious, and they are very powerful. Now, it's important that people not wear the improper gemstone. They should wear the proper one for their chart. Now, for those that cannot afford gemstones, then we can use color therapy in place of the gemstone. So, for example, if someone should strengthen the moon, then having a lot of white colors around them if they cannot afford the pearl. But like that, we can use the color therapy, even in addition to the gemstone therapy. And there are other remedies. My favorite remedies are to reduce any malefic influences in our charts. And most of us have some malefic afflictions in our chart.
Mm-hmm. And we're talking there about Rahu and
Ketu.
Well,
not only just Rahu and Ketu, but any of the planets that become functional malefics due to the rising sign. In
right.
other words, Saturn for one chart may be a great planet, and for another chart, it could be causing some health problems or obstructions or death-like experiences or losses in life. So once we determine whether a planet is a functional benefic planet or a functional malefic planet, then we know whether to strengthen it. But for the malefics, we want to reduce their impact, and one of the best ways is through charitable deeds on a regular basis. In other words, people can help the elderly, they can help the poor and the needy, they can help parents, parents-in-law, mothers, fathers, children, so they can help other people.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a tremendous remedy, and one of my favorite remedies is in marriage. Marriage can be helped simply by being considerate to one's spouse.
Mm-hmm.
So we should always help the elderly, the poor and the needy, and our close people in our family. We should be considerate to our own family members. So we like that, we can, to reduce the afflictions, we want to do charitable deeds. We can donate some service, some time, some clothes, some food, some money. That's fine. And then for the benefic planets, we want to strengthen them. So we can use the gemstones. We can use the color therapy. And my favorite is the mystical kvatch. It's just simply, it's a silver medallion that's engraved with the mathematical numbers that strengthen the planets. It's called the mystical kvatch.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of my favorite, most economical planetary remedies, which I discuss on my website.
Mm-hmm. I know my girlfriend wears it all the time, and in one sense, it's kind of funny because I can hear her coming because I hear it jingling. But she derives great benefit from it, and it's a reminder to me when I see her wearing it that she puts a great deal of faith, if you will, in what you have shared with her, but also what she knows and what she believes, that we are both very strong believers that there is more than one way to approach a situation. There's more than one way to protect yourself or to, shall we say, change the vibration or the energy to make it through a particular situation, or even to help you to go through even good situations, and it can be even better in that sense. Not necessarily an upper, that's not what I'm talking about, but just as you have discussed, these are wonderful, wonderful tools, and that's really what they are, and she really enjoys using the tool.
Well, I think the bottom line is what happens in our generation right now here on Earth is that many people are studying, we're learning, we are moving in a positive direction. Most of us were raised in a time when there was either depressions before, or there was wars going on, and there was other problems, and we see a lot of drinking in the society, we see a lot of drugs in society, we see a lot of conflict and a lot of misery. So it seems like there is a certain element of society of people who want to learn more about themselves and to improve the quality of their personal lives, their mental state, their spiritual state, their physical state. And so maybe they do exercise programs, or maybe they do yoga or meditation or study philosophy. But though, you know, there's people who are studying and learning that want to make a difference in life. And as you study, if you come across some knowledge that makes sense, then you say, well, let me at least test this for a while and see what the influence is. And if it's positive, then that's your experience.
Right.
So you can go with that.
Well, I'll tell you, it's very exciting to have you on the program again here on this Christmas Eve as we remind everyone, Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and a Happy New Year 2002. And it's going to be a great year for us, I know, I feel it, and I am sure that somewhere in the charts and the stars and what have you, David, will be able to share that with us as we move through this second half of our program. I'm Richard Dugan, David Hawthorne is my guest. Website is astroview.com, that's astroview.com. You want a spelling of that? Well, you got it. As soon as I pull it back up, here we go. It's astroview.com. And you can also contact him via the telephone, 641-472-3799. That's 641-472-3799. $37.99. This is Sun Talk. I'm Richard Dugan. Don't go away. We've got more coming up right after this. This is Sun Talk. I'm Richard Dugan. This is Sun Sounds. Christmas Eve Eve. David Hawthorne is my guest. Astroview.com is his website. And 641-472-3799 is his phone number. David, you have told me over the course of many interviews that we've done that every event, not just birth into this world, but event, creates or has a chart, a Vedic chart.
Correct.
Now, how broad or narrow can we look at September the 11th as far as a chart? In other words, can we look at the nation, the U.S. as a whole, in reference to a Vedic chart, September 11th at 8:46 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, which, of course, is either wash up and down the eastern seaboard? Do we look only at New York City, Washington, D.C., Pennsylvania, and their charts? Do we look at the individuals who are involved, be they Middle Eastern or American? How broad and or specific can we get here in this context?
Well, the situation is that we can look at several different issues. Number one, yes, I did do a chart. There, as you pointed out, there is a chart for every moment of the day. So the moment that we give birth to a child, the moment we take a marriage vow, the moment we sign a contract, the moment we start a new company or start a new job or launch a space shuttle or take oath of office of the President of the United States, there is a chart for that moment. So, yes, I did erect a chart for the World Trade Center for the moment that the first plane crashed, and, of course, we can see some violent and negative problems at that time. But I think that's almost... That's not really the chart that I'm using so much. I would love to use the chart for the United States of America. The problem is that there's quite a bit of disputes even among astrologers as to the correct chart to use for USA. Now, just so you know, most astrologers are using July 4th, 1776.
Mm-hmm.
But some astrologers, and I'm one of them, are questioning that because the idea is, you know, we think that's more of the day of the divorce from the King of England, not the founding of the country. The real chart that we're using right now is the chart for when they ratified the Articles of Confederation, which was in March 1771. So I'm going to put that aside. So the next best thing I can use is I did a chart for the inauguration of the President of the United States, George W. Bush, on January 20th, 2001. And as a matter of fact, on the Internet, on January 20th, 2001, I posted an article. I don't know if I sent you a copy of that article, but I posted it on a couple of astrology news groups.
Mm-hmm.
And I discussed that looking at the inauguration of the president, regardless of who took office, see, in my opinion, the problem with our country is we don't understand astrology. We should be using astrology. And then we can do the inauguration of the president at a more auspicious time than what we did in this particular case. In this case, it's a disastrous chart. And I said on January 20th that it would lead to, you know, financial downfalls of the stock market, and it would lead to national calamities and catastrophes.
Mm-hmm.
So that chart is clearly afflicted. Now, just for the listeners that have an interest, I would like to point out that I have also done the chart for George W. Bush, and all astrologers have his birth date and birth time in New Haven, Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
So his chart, my concern was that his main period planet ruling his chart is Saturn, and for him, Saturn rules the eighth house of death-like experiences. And the sub-period, this is interesting, the sub-period at the moment of the election was Mars. He has a wonderful and powerful Mars ruling the 10th house of career, well-placed in the second house of status and wealth, and it aspects the 9th house, which is father. And Mars is a planet of military. So it shows that he had a great military father who had tremendous status and wealth. And so this was very favorable for George W. Bush to become the president. Mm-hmm. However, my concern was that immediately after the election, and even before the inauguration, on December 26th last year, 2000, his sub-period lord became Rahu.
Uh-oh.
The planet of calamity, unexpected events,
mm-hmm.
death-like experiences.
Yes.
Now, this Rahu, unfortunately, continues until November the 2nd, 2003. We have two more years of our president being in a Rahu sub-period.
Now, we can attribute this to the fact that he was inaugurated when he was inaugurated, combined with his birth, which he had no control over in that sense.
Yeah, I'm not even looking at the inauguration right now. I'm just talking about his chart separately.
Oh, okay.
I'm saying that for his chart separately, the main period lord is Saturn ruling death-like experiences.
Mm.
The sub-period at the time of the election was one of his best planets, if not the best planet,
mm-hmm.
Mars, ruling 10th house of career, well-placed in the house of status, ruled by the sun, which is the king. So he becomes a king.
So, go ahead.
But on December 26, 2000, running in for another 2 years, he runs Rahu sub-period, which is a disaster. Now, the next relief for him is March 31st, 2002. So there is a little bit of light coming, but he's in the Rahu sub-period, and then from June 2001 to October 2001, it was Jupiter was the third level.
Mm-hmm.
Jupiter in his chart is a functional malefic. It rules the sixth house of enemies.
Uh-oh. So
he was in Rahu sub-period and Jupiter ruling enemies third period. This really contributed that he was going to have disasters, and then the inauguration showed disasters as well.
And his father is not responsible per se, but his father, because of the role that his father plays in his chart, as you have described, basically did not make friends with many in the Middle East, Saddam Hussein in particular, who it is alleged is connected with Osama bin Laden, the Al-Qaeda, and all of those other groups and so forth, and just terrorism at large. Here we go. You're listening to Sun Talk. I'm Richard Dugan here on Sun Sounds with David Hawthorne, my guest. He is a Vedic astrologer dealing in the realms of astrology that runs some 5,000 years in age, as it were, in this particular area of ancient wisdoms and teachings. And you can reach David Hawthorne either by his website, which is astroview.com, astroview.com, or you can call him 641-472-3799, 641-472-3799 to discuss your personal Vedic chart. It's a very reasonable cost, and you go to the website and you can find out all of the prices of all of the various aspects of his business, and actually it's, and I probably have just used the wrong word, because even though, yes, this is one of the ways in which you do raise funds to support your family and yourself, this is not as much a business as it is a vocation. Am I pretty close to that?
Well, I actually did, you're right, I did for the first 10 or 12 years, I did Vedic astrology basically at no cost or no mm-hmm. charge. The problem is that I do have a wife and children,
right,
and we have to put food on the table. Mm-hmm. However, I do want to make it clear that if people are poor or needy or elderly or on fixed income or have some health problems or some incapacitation of some sort, these people should still call me.
Yes.
I do the charts for either low cost or no cost.
Sliding scale, you might say.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I am not interested in doing this to make money. I'm interested in doing this because it helped my own personal life. It answered a lot of questions for me, and I love sharing with other people. That's in my chart, that I want to be helpful to others.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm always available. And And if someone doesn't have any money, that shouldn't stop them from talking to me. I'd be more than happy to still give them some advice.
Exactly. Well, feel free to call him at 641-472-3799 or go to his website, astroview.com, and check out both his book, Astrology for Living, as well as many of the other items. The Kavash, very interesting medallion, if you will, that, as I said, my girlfriend wears, and I've had a chance to look at it, look at the numbers that are etched on both the front and the back sides, having to do with her Vedic chart. Now, you have a piece of software that people can download from your website, or linked to, I guess, actually you have a link on your site to where people can get this, which will generate the chart.
Correct.
But it's not really going to give them a lot of information. Correct. It's nice to have, and you'll have it too when you give them their reading, so at least then they can look at it and kind of, so to speak, follow along.
Correct.
At least they can see where you're going and where you've been on their chart.
Correct. The thing is that in my book, Astrology for Life, the subtitle was How to Be Your Own Vedic Astrologer.
Mm-hmm.
And I try to teach people how to read their own charts, because there are only four elements of astrology: the planets, the signs, the houses, and the timing of events.
Mm-hmm.
And anyone can memorize, learn the first three, the houses, the signs, and the planets, and then it's a matter of just using some, you know, see, it's a science and an art. It's
right.
A science because it's based on mathematics. I'm not using any psychic ooga booga stuff. I don't talk to dead people and I don't see auras.
Okay.
But it's based on mathematics, which is a science, but it is an art of being able to blend the elements.
Mm-hmm.
But anyone can learn. I've even put together a videotape course, which is now available through my site.
I was just going to mention that, yes. Now, how has the Vedic astrological chart, even for your life, let alone I'm sure you've done it for your children and your wife, how has it changed or affected the way in which you act or react emotionally to events that happen in your life from day to day? Has it really made that much difference?
Absolutely, positively.
So, in other words, you're not going to sit around watching things happen and totally forget about what your chart was telling you, what the map was telling you, that you'd be going through this kind of rough water or smooth sailing. You remember that as these things are happening. Oh, my chart said that I was going to hit some turbulence.
It's true. I do. First off, I'm not obsessive about it. In other words, I don't get up every morning and look and say, okay, can I go outside today? However, I'll be cruising along. Everything's going pretty smooth, and I'm feeling good for a few weeks or even longer sometimes.
Mm-hmm.
But then something comes up, and I go, you know, this is not exactly right. What's going on here? And I'll go look at the stars, and I go, okay, there it is. I see what's going on. And then I just kind of mentally note how long it's going to last, and then we can go from there. One of my favorite illustrations of this was young Indian girl. Young Indian girl eats raw cabbage, gets E. coli, and goes blind. And her parents rush her to the hospital. And the physicians say, well, we have to do surgery on her eyes. Well, in India, it's okay to call your family astrologer. So they
mm-hmm.
said, wait, let's talk to Professor Chowdhury, who happens to be my mentor, who has taught me how to read charts the way I read them now.
Mm-hmm.
So they call Professor Chowdhury, and he says, no surgery. He said, this is the transit of her most malefic planet over the first house, which is the head and the eyes. And this is a 14-day transit. On the 14th day, her sight will return. No surgery. And that is exactly what happened.
So let me ask you something. I have read specific, I will mention the specific book. I have read Autobiography of a Yogi a number of times.
Yes.
And
beautiful
in
book.
It, I'm sorry?
Beautiful book.
And indeed, it was actually my introduction to what I called my search when I was 16 or 17 years of age. And it hasn't ended. But in there it talks about these yogis who will have people come to them, whether from the East or the West, and they will ask for advice on sometimes medical and sometimes other issues. I raise the question, are these yogis so well versed in Vedic astrology that they are able to do just as your mentor did for this child? Or are they tapped into something else? Your best guess or your impression?
The answer to that is a very good question again. You ask a lot of intelligent questions, Richard. Of course, you know that. But,
thank you.
The issue is, in most of those cases, I did read that book, most of these yogis are definitely yogis, and they definitely have these higher powers, we can call them, or siddhis,
mm-hmm.
which is some perfection, some level of consciousness. But it's interesting because one of the branches of Jyotisha is known as nimitta, and that nimitta means the study of omens. So what the average person is not seeing when they walk up to a yogi is that the yogi's awareness is so expanded. They are looking at so many things at once. I mean, for example, they may see the direction you are coming from. They may see the flicker of the candle and the direction that the flicker of the candle moves. Or as the moment of the question, some white dove may fly by or some other omen comes up. And that's how they can answer the questions accurately. This is the same thing. We can get the answers to any question at any moment of the day
mm-hmm.
if we have that innocence of when we ask the question of observing the environment. So if someone comes in now to my office or something, and I'll laugh because I'll see they're wearing black pants and a red shirt. You know, I know that's Saturn and Mars.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, but you can see, we can look in the environment. So I do advise clients to take into consideration omens. Even Henry David Thoreau said it beautifully when he said, "To me, the converging objects of the universe flow, and I must get their meaning."
You had shared a story, and I hope it's appropriate to share it here, of a woman who had, unbeknownst to you, purchased one of these kavashes, these astrological amulets, if you will, and had worn it for a period of time, found that she saw no change, took it off. She lost something, an inheritance or something of this nature, something that was, I guess, maybe near and dear to her or something important to her. Then she came to you, you actually spoke with her, you did her chart, you did so forth, and suggested that she get one of these, and she told you that she had, but that she had returned it, because she hadn't gotten any benefit at that point. My question to you is, and I'm hoping you remember the story.
I do.
If the woman had continued to wear the kavash, would the possibility of her not losing what she lost been greater than losing it?
Absolutely. See, the finer element of the story is that she was entering into a very difficult period of her life. And she didn't so much know that. And she had actually had met with my professor. And I didn't know this at all. But anyways, and he had recommended the silver medallion for her.
Mm-hmm.
So she took the silver medallion, and things went smoothly. She went into a very difficult period, and it was Rahu. And Rahu can be very manipulative and deceptive.
Mm.
So it made her think that nothing was happening, that she didn't need the silver medallion, that she should not be dependent on something. And so she took it off and put it in a drawer and forgot about it. Then 12 months goes by. She calls me and asks for an appointment. She comes in, and I have no idea that she had met with my professor. I had no idea had read her chart. And I go up, and I do her chart for her. And at the end, I say, "I am very sorry to say, but it looks like the last 12 months, you could have lost your inheritance." And she fell off her chair. She said, "This is unbelievable." She said, "For the last 12 months, every month, I've lost my inheritance. I have nothing left whatsoever." And I said, that's what I said, "You should be trying one of these silver medallions." And then she told me the story. So I guess to answer your question, we have no way of knowing.
Certainly.
But the point of the silver medallion is that it is a planetary remedy. It strengthens, it mathematically acknowledges and strengthens the functional benefic planets. Now, these things have a cumulative effect over time. Maximum benefit and a cumulative effect. And I'm absolutely amazed at the ease and peace and comfort and protection that I feel from it. And I do not want to be without it. And if someone offered to buy it from me, I wouldn't sell it to them.
Now, you also tell people when they purchase these that they will also receive information on when to put it on based upon where they are.
Absolutely.
Because that's going to make it, again, it's going to create another chart because it's an event. It's
that's
a
right.
happening in their lives.
Right. When we send out the silver medallions, we need to know where the person is living. And we say, okay, for that location, this particular date and time is the most ideal for putting this on, and then we just leave it on.
Mm-hmm.
I call them cosmic dog tags.
Exactly. Maybe that's what I'm hearing. When is there any time when it's okay or safe to take it off for a short period of time, whether you're going into surgery? Obviously, you can wear it in the shower or the bath. It's waterproof. It's not going to rust on you by any means. But let's say somebody just isn't comfortable wearing it into the shower or the bath or what have you. Or there are those times when maybe they can't wear it. What if they have to go through that process of taking it on and putting it off?
If it's mandatory, like x-rays or surgery or even massage therapy or something, and you want to remove it or need to remove it for a short while, then that's fine. You just take it off. But the best thing is to put it back on immediately.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And but, again, it's a kind of a thing where they have a cumulative effect over time.
Right.
And it's like putting the air back in your tires.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems like you begin to roll down the highway of life more smoothly. It's like watering the root of the tree. All the leaves start to get better. I've noticed in my personal life that the health, the relationships, the psychology, the spiritual choices, everything seems to improve over time. I'm very appreciative. But I think, you know, we can't rely on any gizmo. I think it's important that people take responsibility for their lives, study as much as possible, be kind to other people, be helpful to other people.
You couldn't have said it better in any way, shape, or form. And I really do appreciate your time on the program and sharing with us and joining with us here on Christmas Eve.
Very nice.
And we want to also let you know that if you'd like to get a hold of David, you can do it two ways. One is by calling 641-472-3799. That's 641-472-3799. You can also contact him through his website at astroview.com. And again, I thank you very much, and happy holidays to you and your family.
Thank you, Richard, and I hope that in 2002 we can do a show with callers calling in with their birth chart.
That's what we plan to do. As a matter of fact, we'll set that up and maybe do that maybe the first January program that I'm scheduled, and I'll check with Tony on that one. So
that will
be a lot of fun.
Happy holidays to you and yours.
And to you. And I'm Richard Dugan, and I wish you and yours the very best on this Christmas Eve or Christmas night. And I thank you for joining us.